This Dharma Talk is brought to you by the Chicago Zen Meditation Community. Learn about us and our teacher, Miyoshi Thompson, at zenchicago.org.
Hello, everybody. Good evening, and indeed, happy Earth Day. The origin of declaring one day, April 22nd, to acknowledge the planet we live on stems back to the work of Senator Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin, who in 1970 organized a national demonstration to raise awareness about the environment. It worked and signified the birth of the modern environmental movement and built political momentum for major bills for clean water, clean air, the cleanup of toxic sites, things that we might take for granted these days, but that were not always the case. As a college student in 1983, I was a member of Students for a Better Environment at Northwestern University, and we planned an Earth Day celebration that year to do our best to keep the movement alive. Our keynote speaker was Barry Commoner, and the nationally renowned biologist and ecologist. And we had local speakers like my brother, Ralph Brown, who ran the Nature Conservancy in Illinois, and Lee Botts, a Great Lakes activist who formed the Lake Michigan Federation and helped create the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement between the United States and Canada. And Lee was my mentor and remained my colleague and friend until her death about 5 years ago. There was another person involved, Jill Riddell, a student at Northwestern who I hadn't known before. We ended up being co-organizers of Earth Day that year. And in the process, I found myself falling in love. Graduation was near, and the big question of what to do next was looming over us. The details this time are a little foggy now, but somehow I got an offer to go to Alaska for a job teaching Inuit children to swim. I didn't have any other offers, so I accepted. The problem with that plan, though, was that I was not much of a swimmer. I certainly played around in pools as a kid, but I was much more of a dipper than a swimmer. Get in, get out. Basically, I'm just much more of a terrestrial being. But as graduation got closer, I was told that a prerequisite for teaching Inuit children to swim was having a certificate in life-saving. So dutifully, I signed up for a life-saving class and found myself in a pool in Evanston, learning to save the lives of simulated drowning dummies. It turns out you have to be a good swimmer to do that. And while I passed the class and somewhat improved my swimming, I had to ask myself, was I really the best person to teach Inuit children to swim? Would I pick me to do that? Is this why I got a college degree? As I mulled it over, Jill told me that her plan after graduation was to go to Australia and New Zealand for an extended period of time. I continued mulling, teaching Inuit children to swim, go to Australia and New Zealand with this fascinating person. So I invited myself to join Jill, and shortly thereafter, we were on a Qantas flight to Australia. I was confident that the Inuit children would be better off. Our trip was amazing. The relationship has endured to this day, and so have the memories of that incredible landscape. One memorable excursion was a dip in the ocean to get a glimpse of the beautiful and mysterious Great Barrier Reef. Since then, my adventures have been mostly on land. And if I've been in water, it's been mostly fresh water, dipping in lakes and streams. 2 years ago, my very good friend Mary came back from a visit to a tiny island in Belize, where she snorkeled in Glover's Atoll, a marine sanctuary. She reported a magical, transformative experience and told me that I simply had to join her the next year to see it. I mumbled some interest, but knew that I wouldn't be doing that, and I didn't. But she went again and again came back with a stunning report of the visit. She was insistent that I do this trip the next year, this year, The pressure was strong, so I made the reservations, and this terrestrial being acquired fins, mask, and a snorkel. Last month, we flew to Belize and got on a boat in Dangriga, Belize, and headed 30 miles off the coast to a tiny 11-acre island called Long Key. The last time I had snorkeled was the visit to the Great Barrier Reef 41 years ago. When we were dropped off, there was no option to leave. The next boat would be coming in 7 days. What happened there changed my life. The snorkeling above the reef was just as Mary said, stunning, with so many odd, beautiful, and surprising creatures existing interdependently. As I got more into it, the option to scuba dive was presented. At first, I was not interested, more worried that I wouldn't be able to do it, or would get panicky, or would not remember how to work the equipment. Doesn't seem like you can really dip as a scuba diver. But the opportunity to get closer to that amazing underwater wilderness made me get out of my comfort zone and learn to dive. Here's some notes from my journal. I'm sitting in a thatched cabana right on the edge of the Caribbean Sea. There's a buoy about 200 yards from me now, signifying the wall that drops 3,000 feet below giant coral heads. The sculptural nature of the coral really struck me, as though I was visiting the studio of a renowned ceramic artist. I hope to go back and dive to the underwater cathedral of Glover's Atoll today. I'd like to get the vision of the coral heads and the wall at the wall and the diversity of creatures firmly etched in my memory. And the experience of being in that huge water. I don't know when or if I'll do this again, so now is the time. The world is big and magnificent. I feel honored to get to see these amazing landscapes and pieces of wilderness. Humans are such a problem and have wreaked havoc on the ecosystems I am seeing, but there's a vast resilience in the wide diversity of life forms. Life can't be stopped, yet it's hard not to feel remorse at the overwhelming impact of our species. This amazing place does give rise to awakening. The coral reef is an intricate kaleidoscope of life forms coexisting in their vastly different expressions of life. It makes me wonder if anything in nature, extinction aside, can be truly lost. If humans that stand in the way of the ability, it's humans that stand in the way of the ability to thrive. Can we just choose to simply get out of the way? On my last day, I went back to the underwater cathedral. As I lay in bed that night, images of what I had seen lit up in my mind as though I could feel their power and access their wisdom. It was a profound vision that felt like a calling. I got up early the next morning and headed back to my life. I reveled in the profound experience I had had. Then it quickly became pierced with worries about the fate of that amazing place. Just this month, Katrin Einhorn in the New York Times wrote, "The world's coral reefs are in the throes of a global bleaching event caused by extraordinary ocean temperatures. It's the fourth such global event on record and is expected to affect more reefs than any other. Bleaching occurs when corals become so stressed that they lose the symbiotic algae that they need to survive. Bleaching corals can recover, but if the water is too hot for too long, they die. Coral reefs and vital ecosystems, limestone cradles of marine life that nurture an estimated quarter of ocean species, support the fish that we eat and protect coasts from storms. The economic value of the world's coral reefs has been estimated at $2.7 trillion annually. Currently, 54% of the world's coral reefs have experienced bleaching levels, heat stress, in the past year, and that number is increasing by 1% per week." Einhorn quotes Ove Hugh Guldberg, a professor of marine studies at the University of Queensland. "I do get depressed sometimes because the feeling is like, my God, this is happening. Now we're at the point where we're in the disaster movie." Since I've been back, I've been wrestling with both the feelings of exalted mystery and awe of the underwater wilderness I was so lucky to see and be close to, and the reality that the vast number of species in that ecosystem are at the brink of collapse at the hand of one species, ours. The problem with Homo sapiens is ignorance, greed, and delusion. Our species is so stupid that we don't collectively get it, that if the rest of the species and ecosystems that we depend on go, so will we. It's hard to hold on to these feelings. Hopelessness and despair are totally useless, unproductive, and boring feelings. I no longer have any use for them. I'm interested in a different path. Coming back from my amazing trip, I thought about what it would take for a greater awakening to arrive in a big way, right away. With the night vision I had still in my mind's eye, I thought that the path might be to harness the wisdom of all beings to stimulate the collective awakening in one, Homo sapiens. I know that might sound a little woo-woo, but it's kind of cool to imagine. I wondered, who does this work? Surely there must be practitioners around the world engaged in that kind of work. With no deep knowledge, I presume that perhaps shamans of different cultures take on this sort of healing and tap into a far broader and diverse consciousness to influence and heal the suffering of humans that begets the suffering of so many other. I did some digging. To my surprise, I found Zenji Earthlyn Manuel. She's a Soto Zen priest ordained in the lineage of Suzuki Roshi. She was raised in the Church of Christ, found her way to Buddhism, and has also practiced with Native American and African indigenous traditions, including ritual, ceremony, and divination. She's a seer. And if you can believe it, she wrote a book called The Shamanic Bones of Zen. And Josh, I thought of you when that happened because it was one of these sort of synchronistic, serendipitous moments. There are so many interesting concepts in this book, and many have helped answer my question of who does this work. It turns out that we do. Our practice is part of accessing deep wisdom, the wisdom of much more than self or species, wisdom beyond wisdom. Our practice is about working toward collective awakening to relieve suffering and save all beings. We are practicing together to do just that. Some of Zenji Earthlyn's words. While in the wilderness of Zazen, we are the shamans of our lives, listening and awakening to nature in order to understand and live consciously with our innate relationships with the world around us. Zazen shares certain elements of shamanism, self-realization, enhanced dreams, heightened intuition, deep concentration, a strengthened relation with the wisdom of nature, reflection, speaking to ancestors in ceremony, and living a life of spiritual inquiry into the unseen. In Zen and shamanism, you put aside conceptualization and intellectual understanding to return to a vast state of consciousness in the open field of your life. Meditation is the most ancient and enduring path towards wisdom, vision, or insight. If we release meditation from its confines in various religions, we begin to see the expansive use of this earth-based way of understanding life and navigating the unknown. To take one's seat in Zazen is to sit upon the earth. To me, this is all very encouraging and energizing. So, what am I going to do? I'm going to keep practicing with all of you. I'm going to remain awakened to the magic, mystery, and wisdom of the earth and the myriad of species that are also fascinating. I'm going to recognize and appreciate that they all have their own experiences of life on this planet, have been around forever and have evolved with the planet, and that experience is to be honored. Plus, with 8.1 billion humans making up only 0.01% of the Earth's biomass, humans are outnumbered by the power and wisdom of so many other forms of life, like 20 quadrillion ants that just might be ready to mobilize. When I come into the Zendo, I will bow to the statue of Buddha and acknowledge the ancestors that have kept this practice alive and have made it. I will also bow to the flowers that are an offering to Buddha, but should also symbolize the diversity and interconnection of life and all the wisdom that comes with it. As I sit in Zazen, I will practice emptying the clutter of my mind to help me give rise to the energy and power of all of the species of the earth in order to bring forth the collective awakening of humans to recognize that what is in their hand, to recognize what is in their hands and what is at stake, and to do better. Happy Earth Day.